We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Good morning,
diarrhea!
It's time to wake up. It's 5, and we're live.
Oh, is this thing on? I don't care. I want him to hear.
This is the pregame show, your early morning shot of sports on 95.7 The Game.
Come on!
Love a 5 a.m. show with the little double audio to start it out. How you doing, everybody? Good morning. I hadn't watched a Rockets game since that trade deadline, and they first went up against the Lakers, and it was on TNT, and you just heard Charles Barkley and Shaq dogging on the Rockets because they weren't going out there with anybody in that starting rotation who was over 6'5". They were playing small ball, and Shaq and Chuck were making fun of them because the Lakers were so big and they were going to destroy them. And then the Rockets ended up winning that game, and I hadn't seen a Rockets game since. And that game last night against the Warriors proved to me that that version of small ball that Mike D'Antoni wants to run with Harden and Westbrook and Covington and P.J. Tucker, that's going to work. And it works right now. I don't know if it's going to work in the playoffs. I think it could fall off in the playoffs, but that style of basketball that they played last night, just heaving up threes whenever they got a chance, I thought that made it an enjoyable game to watch. Stephen Langford in on the pregame show, 95.7 The Game, leading up to Joe Lowe and Dibs, but today it will be Coe's Lowe and Dibs. And Coe's, I'm sure you're on the streets right now. Listen up, because I'm giving you content for what you got coming up from 6 to 10. Chilton Autobody text line 95795, 888-957-9570. If you want to get in on the conversation, there are a couple of talking points to get into from that game. A couple of things. One, it's just that style of play that the Rockets had. What'd they score? Like, they had about 12 out of 18 threes made in their first 18 shots. They're averaging 15 a game, and they already had 12 made by the even before the first half was about to end, and the Warriors hadn't made a singular one. I thought Andrew Wiggins for the Warriors had a pretty good game overall. He played good defense. He was putting in the effort. He had a couple of steals, a couple of blocks. He's trying. That's all we can really ask for from him right now. I thought Andrew Wiggins played a very good game, and he was getting it done scoring. He was being a little more aggressive. He seems to be that week off that we had for the All-Star break. I feel like it has made him a little more comfortable in this offense. But the one thing that we wanted to see from Andrew Wiggins after the break, and I mentioned this before the break even started after that last game, I wanted to hopefully see some improvement on just making less mistakes and making less errors. And I thought that for the week, it's been apparent that he sat down, watched film with guys like Steve Kerr, Mike Brown, Jaren Collins, and he's trying to understand the offense just a little bit more. I thought he had a very good game last night, even though the outcome's not what you wanted. I mean, it's 135-105. I'm just trying to find the silver lining in any of this. But Andrew Wiggins is that guy, 22 points on 10 of 17 shooting. He had three rebounds. Didn't have any assists in this game, but he did have a couple of blocks. Those aren't the type of numbers that you'd see with the Timberwolves in terms of defense. You wouldn't see a couple of blocks there on the resume. I thought, you know what? I'm going to give a shout out to this guy. This guy, I'll play the highlight here in a minute. I thought this guy played his best game so far as a Warrior.
21 turnovers tonight. Jeff Green, cross court, turns it over. Toscano Anderson dribbles by someone wiping up the floor, and he dunked it home. Poor youngster came out to wipe up some perspiration, and Toscano Anderson used him as a screen.
Yeah, how scared do you think that kid was?
Juan Toscano Anderson, since they were losing so bad, put a lot of minutes out on the floor, but he had 5-for-8 shooting. He had 10 points. That looked like his best game as a Warrior. He was getting it done defensively. I mean, he was playing the Rockets backups for a majority of the time, but I'm trying to look for the silver lining in everything, people. And Juan Toscano Anderson, a Bay Area boy from East Oakland, he, I felt like, had his best game as a Warrior so far, even though there's not really much to work with. Alan Smilagic, I'm still looking to see some improvement with him. Reggie Miller couldn't pronounce his name. And if you noticed, after the first time he tried to say his name when Smilagic was involved in a play, because Smilagic puts a lot of effort in, you know? It's never pretty when Smilagic has the ball in his hands. It's always kind of a struggle for him to get up his shot, but what he does, he gets it up. He never makes it, but he gets it up, and he does get his offensive rebound quite a bit because of the effort that he puts in. But when Reggie Miller tried pronouncing Smilagic's name, he pronounced it Smilagic. Smilagic. Give Reggie Miller the choke sign there for that one. But you notice that when Smilagic was in the game after that, Reggie Miller did all he could do to not try and even mention his name. I thought this guy also had a pretty good game, too.
Pascal drives on Harden. Two-hand slam and a foul.
Again, that's your ticket. Against this team, make them play D, go at them, try to be physical, get to the rim.
And, you know, Eric Pascal, 12 points, 5-for-8 shooting also, 7 rebounds, 5 of them offensive, 2 assists. He had a block, although he turned the ball over quite a bit. And these are the types of games, because the Rockets just had such a big lead the entire game. This is where you look at the plus-minus, and you look at it with a skewed vision, you know? Because it's like, well, I mean, they were down right from the get-go. Seems like everyone is going to be in the minus. The one who had the highest total was Alan Smilagic. Even though he only put in 12 minutes, he was a +1 on the floor. And that's probably because he was put in the end of the game, and that's when they started scoring a little bit. Jordan Poole continues to be more aggressive with the three and continues to be confident. That's what you want to see from the young guy. But I'm not going to lie, I really did enjoy watching the Rockets on offense. I thought it was fast. I thought the amount of threes that they were jacking up was just, I mean, you know, as Warrior fans, we've seen this. We've seen the three ball be the predominant scoring option, because we felt like, look, we're going to get more value with that three-pointer than anyone's going to get on the two-pointer. And that's all the Rockets were doing. They were guarding the perimeter, but didn't care about guarding anywhere near the paint. They didn't care about protecting the rim. They just wanted to guard the perimeter because they knew that they were going to go back and probably shoot a three anyway. So their three was going to count more than their two. But in total here, 25 for 49. They almost shot 50 threes in this game. They shot 51%. That's crazy. That's crazy. But the big thing that happened at the end of the game, Russell Westbrook got a technical already in the beginning. And with about 6 minutes left, Austin Rivers goes and drives to the basket, tries to get it in, and he does make it. But Russell Westbrook, in that process, was getting ready to try and get the offensive rebound. And in order to do that, he elbowed Damian Lee in the chest. And then from there, he was given the technical. They reviewed it. And then he was ejected from the game. And you saw on the sideline, Russell Westbrook is trying to talk to he didn't know who any of these guys were on the floor. For a fact, on that, with 6 minutes left, he had no idea. So when he went to the sideline, he was trying to talk to Wiggins and Clay, who I'm sure he's had interactions with before. And Wiggins is just smiling, and then Clay is just sitting back saying, God knows what. I wish we had some sort of professional lip reader to tell what Clay Thompson was saying. But here's Russell Westbrook after the game talking about his second technical and his ejection.
I hold myself to a very, very high standard. And I think the refs, the fans, media, the NBA, I'm put in a position now that I'm not allowed to really do much. And obviously, I'm an emotional guy, but if you watch the clip, obviously I hit Lee, but it wasn't on purpose. I'm on the glass, he got hit. He said something to me, I said something to him. I'm standing there, the guy comes snatch the ball in my hand, the guy's coming up to me, I didn't move. But I'm always the one that gets painted to be the bad guy in the whole situation where... And then they asked me to walk towards the Warriors bench, so I'm just over there walking to the bench. And then one of the little young fellas tell me, why you walking over here talking mess to me? And I turned around and said, what'd you say? So now everybody's running over to me. Then I'm walking towards the thing. Then Looney steps in front of me. So it's like I feel like I'm in a position. I'm like, oh, well, Russ is being Russ, which nobody knows what that means. But I got to do a better job of holding myself accountable to a very, very high standard. And I'll make sure I leave no room for error to allow somebody and people to paint me out to be a guy that I'm not. I just think it's unfair, though, that after all that, I'm the only one that get attacked or kicked out. That's not fair. I don't care what nobody says. There's so many other people involved in it that were doing so many things that weren't okay.
So he says that we paint him out to be the bad guy in these situations. And anytime you're the only one on the court who's getting emotional about something, then yeah, that's how we're going to look at you. But at least he gave an honest answer. I mean, you don't normally get a minute and a half clip of eloquence from Russell Westbrook. Normally it's just, you know, him kind of, you know, being a little just standoffish to the media, not really wanting to talk to anybody. But I mean, as Warrior fans, I'm sure we were just laughing at that entire situation. But that's how it is with a lot of these athletes, though. These guys who play with that sort of emotion that we just don't really, I don't think as fans, I don't think we understand it. I mean, we think we do. But when players play with that sort of emotion, they play with that fire, we tend to just look at them as crybabies. I look at Phillip Rivers as the prime example. A lot of Raider fans don't like him because he's constantly jawing off to the ref or, you know, yelling at other guys and looking like he's always frustrated. But really, it's just passion. And Russell Westbrook is that kind of guy. But Russell Westbrook's a guy also who's very easily aggravated, and Kevon Looney knew that. Kevon Looney was on the floor at the time. Kevon Looney, by the way, not looking too bad either, but Kevon Looney at the end, when he just kind of, like, I don't know if Russell Westbrook ran into him, but Kevon Looney for sure stepped into his way and acted like he didn't do anything, and Looney knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. He was holding his hands up as if he didn't step into Russell Westbrook's way as he's walking back to the bench. But, I mean, Looney knows that Russell Westbrook is easily, you know, he's going to react to things. And that's what he does. And, look, I Russell Westbrook's the type of guy for me who I would like to have on my team. But also, I don't like it. I don't like him much on these other teams. You know, he's one of those players. He's like what Draymond Green is to us. You know, we'd love to have him on our team, but we'd hate to have him on the opposition because we know that he can get into these players' heads. But Russell Westbrook's the type of guy where the other players can get into his head, and sometimes that can be really frustrating. And this is like one of the times, one of the few where Russell Westbrook is actually going to have to be an integral part of what the Rockets are going to do in the playoffs if they're going to continue with this small ball style. So, I mean, if he doesn't control himself, he's already got upwards of 10 technicals already. And we all know what happens there whenever you get too many technicals. We've seen it firsthand here. And that's what happened with Draymond Green in 2016. But of any event, it was a very eventful game last night. The Rockets are just quick. I don't know how that's going to survive against these teams that actually have their starters in. The Warriors just weren't ready for how speedy they were. There was one particular play where Draymond just randomly pulls up and shoots a floater, which you don't see Draymond do all that often, and he makes it. And then Russell Westbrook just gets the ball and then runs up court, shoots up a mid-range, and then scores back at him just like that. And the Warriors hadn't even got back on defense yet. Like it just happened so quick in that game. It was an interesting one to watch the last night, for sure. Coming up, though, and I want to know this, and we're going to move on a little bit from basketball to baseball, and I'll go back to basketball toward the end of the show. But Big Poppy, David Ortiz, spoke out yesterday about Mike Fiers. And I want to know from you, if you're an A's fan, on the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795. How do you feel about the Mike Fiers situation? Do you consider him a sort of hero? Do you consider him a snitch? Like, do you think it was right what he did? Do you think it's wrong what he did? I want to know from you. Chilton Auto Body text line 95795, or if you're any fan, really, or 888-957-9570, because David Ortiz, legendary Red Sox guy, spoke out yesterday, and he had some choice words for Mike Fiers. I'll play that for you next. Stephen Langford in on the pregame show, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Stephen Langford.
The pregame show is presented by Golden State Lumber. Three generations, 65 years of experience, and seven Bay Area locations give us the winning edge. When you succeed, we succeed. That's Golden State Lumber at goldenstatelumber.com. By the way, if you're wondering who this song is, it's Kamaya, Bay Area Zone, Oakland Zone, with How Does It Feel? And the reason I'm mentioning that is because she came out with a new album last night, and I highly recommend you take a listen to it. It's about just under a half hour long. It's called Got It Made, Kamaya. And she's one of the more, in my opinion, underrated Bay Area rappers that I think deserves recognition. But I don't know if she, I don't know how much she really gets, at least among, you know, my peers and what I see on Twitter and stuff. Yeah, I don't see her getting the recognition I think she deserves. So Kamaya, check out her new album whenever you get a chance. She came out with a song called Still I Am earlier this year to tease for it, and it's a sick track, so I recommend you take a listen if you like Bay Area music. So Mike Fiers, right? We all know him as the guy who, quote-unquote, snitched on the Astros. Or you could look at him as the guy who finally broke something out about baseball that's needed to be said, which is he's ousted the cheaters. And I think you can look, I think there's a, most people, a majority are looking at it like, look, he did what he had to do. But also on the other side, there are those who are wondering, why didn't you do it in 2017? I thought, you know, out of all the things that Correa said, there were some things that were very questionable with what he decided to say about this whole Astro scandal. And one thing that he did mention, though, was that he wasn't happy with the fact that Mike Fiers mentioned it and, you know, said this to these reporters and basically told on his team from 2017. But he also mentioned Mike Fiers hasn't given any sort of apology or even acknowledged that he was a part of that team and he was happy to get that championship at the time. Because Correa says, like, have you seen the video of Mike Fiers after the game smiling at Minute Maid Park, smiling during the parade when they had it? Like, he celebrated with them knowing that that's what they were doing and that's how they partially won. So, Correa, when he mentioned that, I'm like, yeah, well, there is some truth to that, too. But David Ortiz, he talked yesterday. He's been out of the league for a little bit, and luckily he's doing well after that whole incident. But David Ortiz talked about Mike Fiers, and he was asked about this Astros scandal, and he had some interesting words for Mike Fiers.
I'm mad at this guy, the pitcher that came out talking about it, and let me tell you why. Oh, after you make your money, after you get your ring, you decide to talk about it? Why don't you talk about it during the season when it was going on? Why you didn't say, I don't want to be no part of, or now? So you look like a snitch. You know what I mean? Why you got to talk about it after? Why don't you, that's my problem, you know. Why nobody say anything while it was going on? People is not stupid. You know? Like, if I heard that, if I'm a fan that come to that stadium every home game like we have, at some point I'm going to hear that banging. And I'm talking about as a fan, okay? And they're going to come out, how come there's this banging going on every time we are hitting? You know, like, it was something that it was from what I have seen, seemed like it was something that it came to the point that it was obvious, too obvious. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's my biggest question in this entire thing, and I think I've mentioned that multiple times on this show. Anytime we've talked about it, I've been talking about it a lot at length for this past week, but my biggest question, and this even dates back to when I saw the video that surfaced. I believe the pitcher's name was Farquaad or whatever that White Sox pitcher's name is. He's not the evil guy from Shrek, but it was like something Farquaad or something like that. I can't remember his name, but there was a video that surfaced of the trash can banging, and you're seeing evidence of it actually happening. And I'm like, but this was 2 years ago. Why did he not mention it at the time? Like, why did nobody mention it at the time? And this whole situation makes me wonder, cheating happens in baseball, you know? And I feel like just because you cheat doesn't always mean you win. I feel like there have been some teams that have lost and that cheated in these games but still managed to lose, so no one really cared. But they still cheated. It just so happened that the Astros won in 2017, and now they actually got caught. So people are pinning this on them because they used it to win. But I also feel like there's some who tried to cheat and lost. I know that sounds crazy, but some teams just suck at cheating, you know? And they just weren't told on. And people want to keep the sanctity of the game together. They want to keep their fraternity together. They don't want anything bad to come out about baseball. It's already losing popularity, and finally we're getting a team like the Houston Astros who are kind of popular right now because they got a bunch of likable dudes. We're not gonna tell on them. We're not gonna do any of that. Well, why not? Because now this whole situation that you got going into this season, you might attract a lot of attention here, but it's just a question of, why didn't anyone say anything sooner? And I do think Mike Fiers eventually, I'm not going to say that he's never going to acknowledge it. I think he will at some point when all this stuff starts coming out about him. I do like how he's handling it. I think Fiers is, he's a strong-willed dude. Everyone was looking at him as an enemy back when he was on the Tigers, and he beamed Giancarlo Stanton in the face. He didn't mean to do it, but people were looking at Mike Fiers in a different light at that time, and he handled that very well. This is just another piece of adversity that he has to face in his career, and I think he's going to handle this well too. But also, it's kind of like it's comparing apples to oranges, but when I'm looking back on the Kevin Durant thing, when he departed here from the Bay Area, I went on these airwaves and I cried. Not really, not legitimately, but, you know, I complained. I was just like, you know, Kevin Durant, you could have said a thank you. You know, you could have acknowledged the fans in some sort of way. I know you weren't too thrilled with the fact that we like Steph Curry more, but you could have at least thanked us in some capacity at the time. Instead, he just had some weird photo. He posted a weird photo of him riding a bike outside of the Golden Gate Bridge saying on to the next chapter. And I was saying you couldn't at least acknowledge the fans here. Maybe apology, or not an apology, but a thank you is too far. But just acknowledge, you know, your time here. And that's what I think Mike Fiers should at least do, is acknowledge the fact that he was a part of that team in 2017. Because, you know, and David Ortiz isn't directly saying he's a snitch, but he's saying that his actions are that of a snitch. From the 510 on the Chilton Auto Body text line, it must have been hard for the Astros to cheat in Oakland with the drummers in the bleachers. By the way, I need to pull up this quote from Brett Anderson when he was asked about the A's and cheating, because this quote that he had was amazing about why he didn't cheat. Let me pull that up. But I do want to know from you on the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795. Do you think Fiers was right in ousting the Astros for what they did, at least putting a voice to it? Because there were things, you know, we had the Nationals in this last situation where they were hearing whistling. So this was what kind of brought everything to light. But here's what Brett Anderson had to say via The Athletic. This is what he had to say about the A's and cheating. Brett Anderson, former pitcher. I know the A's weren't cheating because, one, I don't know if they could afford it. And to relay from bleeping 300 yards away in the video room, what were we going to do? Get some vendor to throw some popcorn up in the air or something? It's too bleeping far to relay something. Anderson joked the only way for Oakland to communicate would be through the ballpark's decaying infrastructure. The lights go out, it's a curveball, Anderson said. If there's a sewage backup, it's a fastball. And he went on Twitter, and some people took that the wrong way, but Brett Anderson's joking about that whole situation, and A's fans should know how much of an affinity he has towards the A's, but it's a funny joke to make at the time. From the 925, sign picking happens all the time. I teach my 12-year-old to try and pick up signs. They are professional athletes. They should switch their sign schemes every inning so they can't be picked up on. Like, there's a lot that goes into this, you know? And I understand that you teach your 12-year-olds to try and pick up signs. That's exactly what I was taught also. But we didn't have these high-tech cameras, these cameras that we don't even know about. Like, it's not just like, hey, yeah, he's got a zoomed-in Nikon. You know, it's not like a zoomed-in Canon and it's just using that. These are high-tech, legitimate cameras which are picking up these signs from far away, and they are literally decoding their signs. It's crazy. You look at a catcher because you could teach a 12. Yeah, sure. You could teach. Like, I was able to pick up signs just because all that was being thrown down was a 1 and a 2 and possibly a 3 whenever this random, 13-year-old had a knuckleball. But, you'd pick up the signs at second base and what we'd personally do was we'd put our hands in fists, whenever we were leading off second. If we were on second, we'd put our hands in fists. If it was a fastball, we'd lay our hands flat on our legs. If it was a curveball, a breaking ball, whatever. So we had that, but, the signs that they use now in the pros, they're a little different than what are used now because they use a whole bunch of different little motions and, they throw down a variety of numbers, and that's obvious. It's nothing new, and you just have to watch a game to understand that. But, they're using so much just different stuff, and they just got caught. The Astros just got caught. I truly don't believe they're the only team that has done something like this. I really don't. I think that this investigation is going to go on further into the league. You wonder if there's going to be another guy like Mike Fiers who maybe speaks out. Probably not, because of the blowback Fiers does have on him right now. But I do wonder, though, like, is there going to be another player who possibly ousts another team for what they did back then? And then Rob Manfred has a whole nother mess on his hands. What an interesting season this is going to be, man. This is going to be one to pay attention to for sure. And you're like everyone's going to go to a game and try and look for something, right? You're going to hear like a noise. You're going to hear like a horn blow twice. You're going to be like, oh, they're cheating. Like, everyone's going to look out for something nowadays. But it's just hard for me to fathom why no one spoke out about this 2 years ago, even though, they say that we have to go back to the commissioner's report. It hasn't happened in 2018 and 2019. There is a variation of it in 2018 and 2019, despite what the commissioner's report says. Chilton Auto Body text line 95795 888-957-9570. Stephen Langford did on the pregame show want to continue to discuss this Astros thing because Big Poppy defended Jose Altuve. We're going to play our interview of the day, and then I'll play some Kerr postgame and Pascal postgame from after yesterday's loss to the Houston Rockets. Stephen Langford in on the pregame show, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Stephen Langford.
The pregame show on 95.7 The Game is presented by Golden State Lumber. With locations across the Bay Area, we offer next day delivery. Now that's a winning game plan. That's Golden State Lumber at goldenstatelumber.com. So we had an interview yesterday, and I'm going to play that for you now. And this got people pretty heated, and this could get you pretty heated as well. But we had Chris Mad Dog Russo on with Joe Lo and Dibs yesterday, and he did an interview where he asked him a little bit about the Astros, the state of the Giants right now, and this whole Aubrey Huff situation. So here's Chris Russo with Joe Lo and Dibs. He is our interview of the day. Take a listen.
Well, it certainly does. You're right about that. I'm going to do a lot of the 40th anniversary of the hockey today, but for the most part, as you said, last week or so on both radio and the television, I've been doing nothing but that. Listen, the Astros got to shut up. They got to take every hit known to man. I don't want to hear stories to the Washington Post with Reddick yesterday. I don't want to hear Correa talk to Ken Rosenthal last Saturday. I think there is some merit to their idea that they probably would have beaten the Dodgers anyway, but the bottom line is, you know, arguing the Astros that they cheated, and it's deplorable, but they still probably would have won both series in the postseason is a hard line to walk, and the Astros should just grin and bear it, the bottom line. I think Manfred's getting way too much grief. All right, you want to make a big deal about the medal comment? He took that back. He apologized. If you want to sit there and say he should have suspended Crane, which I agree with, he should have. I'll buy that. That's something he could have done. You know, he probably should have investigated that 2019 buzzer thing a little more thoroughly. Maybe held the Astros' hands last Thursday in that ridiculous press conference when Crane threw Dusty out to the Wolves. You know, threw one of the alligators with Dusty there basically saying, you know, we're going to move on, which he wasn't even on the team in 2017. But I don't think really you can kill Manfred for the no punishment. I think the Astros as a group got a scarlet letter, which might be worse. And I don't think you could sit there and give them grief about granting that team immunity so they get to the bottom of it. So overall, I think, you know, he's low-hanging fruit. Everybody wants to pound on somebody, so they're going to pound on Manfred. He's going to have to deal with that. But I do think he's getting too much abuse. But the Astros got to shut up. You know, the Dodgers and Yankees want to talk. Go ahead. You know, Bellinger forgets to tell us that they lost two games of that World Series at home, including the game that Jansen blew. The Yankees forget to tell you that they scored about one run in four games in Houston in 2017 and couldn't hit themselves out of a paper bag, which they forget to tell you. But, again, those two teams are the wronged, so they're going to scream. And I guess you got to put up with it if you're a baseball fan.
And it's embarrassing for baseball, and hopefully by the time the real games start here in the end of March, they can move beyond it. Here locally, the San Francisco Giants, Chris, I know you're a big fan. What do you make of where the organization is right now? And is it really just a couple of years until this team can compete again?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the farm system. I did not like Kapler getting hired. I don't know why you hire I don't care what your relationship with him was in Philly or in the Dodgers. You can't hire a guy who got fired 2 years in a row and his team collapsed 2 years in a row. You cannot hire him as your manager. I mean, I did not understand that. You know, I know Pilar out of there, no run at Bumgarner. They probably needed to be done. You know, the Giants have basically put off tomorrow for today for a long time. So they're going to, and the Dodgers are not going anywhere for the long time, too. So you got to remember, even if you do try to win, that winning is going to be only for a wild card. So I do understand the philosophy, but that can be a fickle fan base. You know, you're talking to me now, who's been a Giant fan since 1966, and there's going to be a lot of empty seats in that ballpark. I don't care how nice it is for the foreseeable future, and the Giants are going to have to realize that and have to deal with it. You know, I mean, the manager thing I was stunned with. I got to give Farhan an opportunity to try to put something together. You got to give him a chance. He had the Bochy thing. You know, he was sort of had that great hot streak last year, which kind of maybe prevented him from making a move at the deadline to get a little younger. I got to give the Giants a little break putting the team together. You got to give them a chance. But for the next couple of years, they're going to be bad. It's all there is. They're going to win 70 games. That's all there is to it. You're going to have to live with it if you're a Giant fan.
Chris, a lot of things going on here in the Bay Area about the Giants. I know they want to get people into the yard, so they're going to have some great promotions this year. One of them will celebrate the 10-year anniversary of the first World Series championship, but they will be without one key player from that team, Aubrey Huff. How do you see that scenario with Huff not being invited, being called and told you're not invited to come celebrate the 10-year anniversary?
Well, it's a joke. That's me. This is from my part. First off, Huff was very instrumental in them winning. Say that year, he had a great year. He got a big hit in Atlanta in Game 3 in the ninth inning. They wouldn't have won that series without that hit. Number two, I'm tired of having the Giants tell us how to think. All right, who in the Giants telling me how to think? I don't like Huff. You think I like the tweets? You think anybody who's a decent citizen likes those asinine tweets? But he didn't commit a crime. He didn't murder John F. Kennedy. geez, he should be at that stupid. The Giants are trying to do anything to make a little money because they know the season's lost, so let's, you know, relive the glory days. To me, that's a disgrace. And especially for a franchise that goes out of its way to honor Bonds, who slaughtered the record books and is the biggest cheat, since anybody on Houston's team, who's not the home run king, who Aaron is, and the Giants go out of the way to honor Bonds, who did a lot worse things for baseball than Huff ever did. So I am really down on it. Most people I know who are huge Giant fans from way back here in the Northeast think the Giants are a complete joke. You cannot honor the 2010 Giants and not bring in their cleanup hitter. I mean, come on. What are you doing? Style, he wants, and bring him to the ballpark. He gets booed tough. He deserves to get booed. But he is part of that team. And the Giants, who sit there and turn the other cheek with Bonds, who everybody in every other city in America can't stand him, is a disaster for the sport. And the Giants honor him. And Huff and Bonds, who never won, and Huff helped them do win. I'm really down. This is me now. I am. That's hypocrisy at its greatest norm. And I've been a Giant fan for 55 years. That's a disgrace what the Giants are doing.
Chris Mad Dog Russo with Joe Cozen Dibs on 95.7 The Game. How much of it do you think has to do with the politics, and how much of it do you think has to do with everything outside of the politics, the other tweets we're talking about?
Listen, I mean, I couldn't answer that. I mean, I don't know. Who knows what the Giants' reasons are? And I am not. Nobody's defending Huff. We know he's a jerk. Nobody's defending him. He's an idiot. I mean, you know, now he says he would have done this and with satire. I don't care. Those tweets are ridiculous. But the bottom line is, he didn't break a law. He's not, you know, they didn't take O.J.'s bust out of Canton. Lawrence Taylor still gets greeted at Giant Stadium every day. I mean, this is ridiculous. Aubrey Huff can't be introduced from the team that won the championship, and he was a this is not some bit part. This guy was a huge player on that team. Hit 20-something homers, 90 RBIs, and he treated me horrendously. I was in that ballpark game, one of the World Series. I was there for 3 days, all week before the game. He never came on. Nasty to producers. I got no love lost for him. He was a nasty guy. But what's right is right. He should be at that ceremony. And the Giants, here's where the Giants get killed. They sit there and they honor Bonds. Bonds is a cheat. He had 760. He's the biggest cheat in the world, that guy. And I remember, I go back to 90. I mean, I love Bonds, what he did for the Giants in the early days. But he cheated the franchise, cheated the sport. And yet, then the Giants turn the other cheek. So you can't do that and have the number on the outfield and the home runs and, you know, standing ovations and then blow off Huff. That's not right. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, that's the way I feel about it. I'm sure in San Francisco it's a 50-50 situation. But, you know, I am a legit Giant fan, much more legit than half your fans who listen there. I go 55 years to this franchise every day, middle of the night, East Coast watching games on the West Coast, going back to Mays, McCovey. I mean, they brought the trophy into the studio in 2010 when they won. That is not the right thing. And Huff's a jerk. That's not the right thing to do.
How much do you think it's just the market in which we are here in San Francisco?
I mean, this is not about politics. This is about the team. The team won. He was on the team. All right? The ball club won a championship, and he was on it. And they gave him a two-year, $20 million contract when the year is over. And he claims he kind of did it all year during the clubhouse, loosened up the team. I don't know that. Who knows? But, geez, come on. I mean, Giants, hold your nose for a half hour and invite him and let him go out there, get booed. He deserves that. Let booed and be done with it. I mean, my goodness, you can't honor Bonds and not honor the guy who hoped to win a championship who didn't do steroids and ruin the record books. I mean, the Giants, that's hypocrisy beyond belief. And this is my franchise.
Do you think something could have to do with the fact that Bonds, by and large, and I'm not disputing anything you're saying, but Bonds, by and large, still loved by the fan base, while Huff is an easier guy to cast off because he's become more of a villain to the fan base?
Well, I understand that, but this is not about the fan base, it's about the Giants. This is about their organization doing the right thing. That's what this is not about some fan who goes to, you know, a game a year and wouldn't be able to tell you who Mike McCormick is. I mean, this is about the franchise doing the right thing. They want to honor Bonds because he was one of them. I'll have to live with it. They want to put his number and his home run total and his splash hits and all that nonsense and bring him back for Old Timers Day and they honor him when he's introduced. You know, that's up to them. They have a right to do that. He did all this as a Giant. But you got to be consistent, okay? Be consistent. You can't honor Bonds, who did a lot worse for the sport than Huff ever did. You can't even look at the home run records, for crying out loud. He ruined the record books. Everybody knows that. You don't think the commissioner knows that? And you do that, you turn the other cheek with that, and then you blow this guy off who helped you win a title. You can't deal with him for 20 minutes. Oh, come on.
Yeah.
You can't defend it. At least my audience can. Now, listen, if I'm doing sports talk in San Francisco, I am sure, a town I love, I am sure that fans would be calling me up and killing me left and right. They have the right to do that. This is the realm we live in. But you cannot argue the hypocrisy. That you cannot. You got to be consistent as an organization, and the Giants are not being consistent.
You know, in this scenario, Aubrey Huff said that Larry Bear, who runs the team, called him and said it was a unanimous vote of the board of directors that they did not want to invite him to the thing.
Well, Larry Bear's wrong.
Right. Should the players from 2010 have a say in whether or not they want their teammate with them to be honored on that particular day?
Yeah, you know what they should do? They shouldn't show up is what they shouldn't do. That team's going to make the Giants money on a year. They're not going to, not going to get garbage into those seats with a lousy season and Larry Bear unanimous. Who are the Giants to tell us what to think as a Giant fan? What Giant? I mean, did Larry Bear stand up and cheer when Huff got the hit against the Braves that went into right field that scored the game-winning run in that Sunday afternoon game at 4-3 in Atlanta in Game 3? He damn right he did. Stood up. Cheered his rear end off. Now Larry's going to tell us what to think? Oh, come on. I mean, I'm sorry. And I hate Huff. I'm not a Huff fan. Were you kidding me? He's an idiot. But you know what? What's right's right. He didn't commit a felony. He didn't commit a crime. I mean, my goodness. I'm really... And again, this is me now, and I live with Giant fans in the Northeast. You know, I've been to a million of these meetings and everything else. They all agree with me. Not the right thing for the Giants. So who are the Giants to tell us what to think? The guy helped them win a championship.
Mad Dog Sports Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 82. You can also catch him on High Heat on the MLB Network, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. Chris Mad Dog Russo with Joe Cozen-Dibbs on 95.7 The Game. Mad Dog, we appreciate the time and the thoughts.
We love you guys. Keep it going. Hope I didn't get too many people mad.
Good. That's all right. Thanks for being you. We appreciate it.
All right, pal. See you guys later.
See ya.
Woo! All right, where do you want to begin there? He makes a lot of...
That was Chris Mad Dog Russo, legendary radio broadcaster who joined the guys yesterday, and he had very strong opinions on everything. And I'm not going to get into the whole semantics of whether the Giants are right or wrong. I'm just going to give you my opinion on it really quick. I personally, like, if let's just say none of this came out, let's just say no one reported on this, right? Let's just, like, we didn't know who was going to be at this 2010 World Series anniversary celebration. Let's just say we didn't know anything about it, right? Well, I'm going to be there for sure. And if I'm going to be there and Huff wasn't there and they didn't report it, I wouldn't have noticed. I probably wouldn't have noticed. And if Huff were to be there, I wouldn't be too thrilled with all the boos that were going to be happening just because this was the first 2010 team that brought a championship to San Francisco, the first team after decades. And I would have wanted it to be a celebration. And personally, if he didn't show up there and, you know, the Giants didn't invite him, I wouldn't have probably noticed, to be honest with you, just because I've seen what's happened with the past few years with his Twitter and all this sort of stuff. And for me, I wouldn't really have cared if he hadn't been there one way or another. And if he had, I would have been... You know, I just would have been like, well, why'd you do that? You know, you didn't have to invite the boos. I'm really not that passionate about this whole subject, to be honest with you. Like, I don't have much passion for inviting a guy or not, you know, because it gets into this whole minutia of stuff that personally, I think for me in my life, I kind of like, there are conversations that we need to have, but sometimes it's just not worth having some of them with certain people. And, you know, I'm not going to be that passionate about it either way. That's just kind of the way I view the entire thing. I will say this, though. Let me say a couple of things about Mad Dog Russo, okay? And this is the same thing goes for Stephen A. Smith. Regardless of the whatever you think about the views or the points that they're making, I just want to tell you this, and this is how I look at these guys. I may not agree with the points that they make, but the way that these guys, these pros, these legends, deliver their points, after doing this for just over a year now consistently and seeing how they deliver what they're trying to say, it's crazy how good those guys are at what they do. And I think a lot of people, when they hear the point and they disagree with it, they get super mad and don't try and look at how they're actually delivering their point. But the way they deliver it, it's unreal. It's unreal. And the one point that he kept on making was talking about Bonds. And this is how I'm going to kind of equate it to what the Houston Astros are doing right now. But the Astros, the reason they got called out for cheating is because they won. And I really do believe that there are other teams who have cheated that just lost. So we didn't care that they cheated because they lost when they were cheating. Cheating doesn't guarantee you a win. You know, it helps. It helps, but sometimes the other team might be just that good and you lose. And we don't care because the other team won. And with Barry Bonds and this whole, you know, PED use thing, look, you look back at it. I forgot who it was. I think it was David Wells. Was it David Wells, the pitcher on the East Coast over there? David Wells, really good pitcher, but he was saying upwards of, I want to say 70% of players at that time were using PEDs. We just pin it on Barry Bonds because Barry Bonds was better than everybody. Well, Barry Bonds took more PEDs than these other guys. Everyone took PEDs. That's how it was back then. They call it the steroid era for a reason. We just look at Barry because Barry was a legit baseball player. And he was so good. PEDs don't get you a 490 on base percentage when you're 42 years old. That's just not what PEDs do. Sure, they might help with the power on the ball, but that takes away from the fact that, you know, for me, Barry Bonds had the greatest eye of all time. And the hand-eye coordination and him being able to notice pitches. Jose Canseco said earlier this week that he would switch PEDs in order if he had a choice between the PED use and being able to tell what pitch is coming, he would scratch the PEDs and would take the pitch thing in general. So Barry Bonds didn't have that. And these guys tried to pitch around him all the time. And it didn't work because he was that good. I'm very, like, that's the kind of conversation I'm actually passionate about because Barry Bonds is my favorite player. And every team, every fan calls him out from outside of San Francisco. Well, then every fan should look in the mirror at their own team and realize that a lot of their own team were doing the same thing. It just so happened their players stunk at it. You know? That's how I look at this whole situation, is that we're looking at the Astros right now. We're using them as that example because they got caught for one, but also they won. And the reason they got caught is because they won. And people were a little bit jealous. Some guys were not too thrilled and they don't feel like it helped with the integrity of the game. And that's understandable, too. But I'm just saying there were probably more teams. I do think there were more teams involved. Hell, I mean, Mad Dog Russo, I saw a clip the other day. He was calling out the Yankees. The Yankees haven't even been pinned on anything. They've just had the Carlos Beltran news that came out, the little Joe Girardi slip up on MLB Network where he talked about they were just asking him in a joking manner. They were asking Joe Girardi on MLB Network. You know, they were on that set where it's like a makeshift field, and you know, Joe Girardi was at the plate. And they kind of pretended like, hey, how'd you get the signs? You know, that kind of thing. And, you know, they had a good laugh about it. And then Joe Girardi is like, he basically said, well, we would get, you know, the information from up there. And then they would direct that to the hit. No, not to the hit, to the guy at second base. And he slipped up on that. And you know, the video was completely taken out of context. And we really don't know which team he was talking about. Everyone just puts it on the Yankees because he was the manager for when they were the World Series team. But still, like, there's something to it, you know, and from the from the from the 510, cheating is cheating. Your point makes no sense. If someone is caught cheating, winning or losing, they are ostracized or punished. Usually not this time. Not if they lose. Sorry, that's not what happens. Not if they lose. They don't. They don't get caught cheating. Because a lot of teams who I feel like did lose haven't got cheating. Or haven't got caught cheating. Excuse me. Yeah. And from the 510, your favorite player is a cheater. Haha, that sucks. I mean, look at your favorite player. Look at your favorite player. Probably cheated too. This is baseball. A lot of it's happened over the years. No one's just, it's just a lot of people haven't gotten caught. Depending on who your favorite baseball player is. My favorite player right now, though, is Mike Trout by far in the league. And then the second is Javi Baez. Really like those guys. And I like what the Astros were doing, and that's what kind of stinks about this whole situation with the Astros and their and the whole cheating scandal with the Astros, because I really did like that team out of 2017. I was a big fan. I was a big fan of what Jose Altuve and Carlos Correa were doing. I was a big fan of that team in the past couple of years, 2018 and 2019. Still, I'm still like a fan, but also I realize like, wow, there was that whole situation where you're knowing what pitch is coming is crazy. Coming up though is going to be Coe's Low and Dibs. Today we've kind of talked about a myriad of things. We talked about what the Rockets did to the Warriors last night and the fact that they are using that small ball strategy. I don't know if that's going to last in the playoffs when they go up against guys that actually have dudes who are starters in this league as opposed to the Warriors who don't exactly have all their starters out on the floor. The big news that surfaced yesterday for the Warriors was Klay Thompson. And Klay Thompson will not be making his return this season, as reported by Mark Stein of the New York Times. And he basically, you know what, like, I don't think Klay needs to come back this year. I do think Steph needs to, though. I do think Steph needs to, because it's not one of those injuries like Klay where he tore something. Steph just fell down and broke his wrist. Like, that's an injury that you can come back from, and that's going to be pretty hard to re-aggravate. But the whole situation with Klay, I agree with the fact that he shouldn't come back. Just give him a year off. But I do think Steph needs to be out on the court, because that will help Andrew Wiggins at the most. Your one guy that Andrew Wiggins is going to be working with a lot is going to be Steph. So just having Steph on the floor there alone will help him out. And I think that in terms of what the Warriors are doing and what Andrew Wiggins has done so far, again, 22 points last night, I think Andrew Wiggins has really shown me something, and what he's been doing on defense too. He's shown me a lot, shown me more than I expected from him. Coe's Low and Dibs coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.